This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take an in-depth look at low-carb dieting, the pros and cons, and also about a substance that is very misunderstood. It's leptin. When it comes down to it, a lot of factors that influence our health, our waistlines, have to do with leptin, and it's really poorly understood. And to help us out with that, I've invited award-winning author and widely recognized expert on leptin, Kat James. Kat's graced our airwaves in the past, and she is a real expert on this subject. Also has some personal experiences that she'll share with us. Kat, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine once again.
Great to be back on the show, Dr. Hoffman.
It's my pleasure. And actually, one of the reasons that I invited you on the show is that a little while ago, sort of towards the end of the summer, a study came out that was widely interpreted as suggesting that too much carbohydrate in the diet is bad, but low-carb diets may be unhealthy as well. This according to a study reported in The Lancet Public Health, and we had a little preliminary discussion about that.
Yeah.
We've critiqued it, both of us, in our writings and in our sharings with our followers. And so let's do a deep dive on that first and discuss the Lancet study.
Sure. And it was really, as you know, a meta-analysis, and it was primarily what was surprising about it. You know, they did use data from other studies, but the big showcase was a 25-year follow-up from the Atherosclerosis Risk in Communities, otherwise known as the ERIC study. And this was a questionnaire, and there's your first red flag. A questionnaire, which is, you know, even the form of questionnaire has been discredited by a Stanford professor, but it was for 45
so-called dietary recall, and that's actually a big controversy in the field of nutrition, because when studies are based on dietary recall, if you ask me what I ate last Tuesday,
yeah,
you know, much less, you know, 5 or 10 years ago.
Yes.
I'm going to have some problems.
Yes, exactly.
And I may brag. I may, you know, try to show what an awesome diet I'm on. On the other hand, I may, you know, miss some of the benefits of the diet that I had, you know. And so really very poor correlation between dietary recall studies and what people actually eat. So, okay, there's a bit of a problem.
There you go. Now, this was 45-year-olds to 64-year-olds in four U.S. communities between 87 and 89, 19, 87, and 89, and they stopped even looking at the questionnaires after the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
So this also assumes that people didn't change their diets.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I did in the 80s. I kind of missed a lot of the 80s because I was in med school, and it was only into the 90s that I discovered groups like Duran Duran and Billy Idol. So I kind of was a latecomer. So, you know, in terms of asking me what I ate,
there's a lot of blurry area there.
Yeah, I would have problems.
And we won't even talk about what kind of fat we were eating between 1987 and 89. And so they looked back and divided these groups into what they called low carb, moderately low carb, moderately high carb, and high carb
mm-hmm.
groups.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, would we consider 30% of both calories in both carbohydrates and fat to be either low carb or high carb, maybe high carb in my view, but
that's
certainly
pretty,
not
high carb.
Certainly not low carb.
And that was the low carb group?
Yeah, that was the lowest carb. That was the
wow.
highest fat, lowest carb group. Nobody was on, first of all, they weren't even on diet. This was a heart disease study. Mm-hmm. No one was trying to follow any diet.
So it was kind of like smorgasbord, you know, eat whatever
exactly.
you like. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And we'll call the people who had the most carb the high carb group, and the people who had the lowest carb the low carb group, whether that meets any respectable definition or not.
Just parenthetically, you know, you're a low carb diet expert. What percentage of calories from carbs would you consider a really bona fide low carb diet for the purpose of controlling diabetes or insulin resistance or for weight loss?
20. I mean, it's you've got your protein in there, so that's not really true. But look at the fat; it's going to be at least 70. You know, anyone even pretending is going to go 65 fat percent in fat. Mm-hmm. And also, speaking of protein, which is something we don't know about here, very many low carbers are doing, and these aren't low carbers, but people consuming fewer carbs are doing excess protein, and we know what's wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no
We'll get to that in a minute, because that is actually an important point. When we put people on low carb diets, they think it's like you know, lots and lots of protein powder, whey powder, you know, 22-ounce porterhouse steaks, you know, with the fat trimmed off the side.
Yeah.
And they think that that's going to do the trick. And then they get disappointed because they're not losing the weight.
Especially
their blood sugar is not improving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so there were no truly low-carb or truly high-fat groups in this study.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you could have just as easily called them, in my view, low-fat, and because it's the same amount of carb as fat. So there's a big problem there. The body, as you know, chooses only one primary fuel. And interestingly, Dr. Ron Rosedale, and I talked to him about this, and even on the air, he said that eating equal amounts of both carb and fat is the worst thing
mm-hmm.
you could do.
Yeah, it's kind of like, this is the problem, I think, when people hear the low-fat mantra, is that they end up eating pretty much a lot of fat and a lot of carbs, and you know that just doesn't work. And similarly,
I call it dietary purgatory.
Yeah, and similarly, you know, on the Atkins diet, you know, you got to be very low carb, and you got to have adequate fat to make it work. But the combo of like moderation, you know, moderation actually is bad when it comes to that
work.
Because, you know, moderate amounts of carbs and moderate amount of fats.
It's like telling an alcoholic to have a moderate amount of alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And and there's there's the protein aspect, but then there is also the fact that I thought was significant is that time period that they surveyed these people was the period of trans fat as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you're so far off the charts with any validity mm-hmm. so far. And again, I will, something that Dr. Rosedale said on the air was he said that it was irresponsible for the Lancet to even publish this mm-hmm. and that it was more suited for the National Enquirer.
Yeah. And in fact, I'm going to read a quote from the study, if you don't mind.
Sure.
They say, quote, the study authors wrote, these data provide further evidence that animal-based low-carbohydrate diets, which are more prevalent in North American and European populations, should be discouraged.
Yes.
Should be discouraged. So in other words,
yes.
You don't go low-carb.
Right.
But you can't really infer that from the study because what kind of low-carb diet? First of all, they weren't low-carb diets. Secondly, you know, when you look at populations, you know, the average unwashed multitude, the people who tend to eat a lot of animal foods may be doing a lot of other not great
exactly.
stuff and not eating.
They're not doing yoga.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is what's wrong with epidemiological research. So these example of two of the worst kinds of and why it's hard to do good studies. But some good studies were done, in fact, right leading up to this. And I actually think one of the reasons that to me this looks like they scrambled to pull mm-hmm. something together mm-hmm. because it's so obviously shoddy is that there was the Journal of Nutrition publishing of the study, and Eric Westman was one of the researchers that looked at 14, maybe it was 12, of the least controversial studies, ones that were not controversial, and almost as if his team was almost urgent, they just said the seriousness, they concluded the seriousness of diabetes requires that we evaluate all of the evidence that is available. The 12 points are sufficiently compelling that we feel that the burden of proof rests now with those, I said now, that's my emphasis, with those who are opposed.
It's an emergency. Really, it's an emergency. Yeah. We're at war. It's sort of like if we were attacked in Pearl Harbor and FDR got up on the podium and said, you know, this day shall live in infamy. We're going to do a study. You know, and we'll spend 6 months figuring out how to respond to the Japanese attack.
Yes.
You know, I mean, people are dying left and right.
Yeah. And he went on to say, at the end of our clinic day, we go home thinking the clinical improvement is so large and obvious. Why don't other doctors understand? Hmm. He says carbohydrate restriction is easily grasped by patients. And he's saying by reducing it in the diet, we've been able to taper patients off of 150 units of insulin in 8 days. And he's just scratching his head. Mm-hmm. And so, and there is a new kind of committee that's meeting. It's the representatives of the low who are dependent in the medical world on the low fat paradigm and the low carb paradigm. I think that's kind of interesting, but they're trying to get together.
Okay.
But the public knows. The public knows. So, but I did get
a lot. It's like Trump meeting, the North Korean dictator. You know, it's kind of like let's see if we can, bury the hatchet.
Let's try and work things out.
Right.
Yeah. But I did hear from a lot of people who had already had their lives changed, and they were worried by this. So they do have really good people creating mm-hmm. those headlines.
Yeah.
Which went everywhere. And it struck some fear in people who'd already been transformed.
It poisoned the well. You know, I think some of the journalistic recounting of this was irresponsible because they would, low-fat diet.
Yep.
I'm sorry, low-carb diet kills you. That whole thing started to get into memes in the press. And that, I think, discouraged a lot of people from pursuing a really healthy path.
Yeah.
But there are pitfalls in following a low-carb diet. So, first of all, why don't you share a little bit your personal experience?
Sure.
Because you've undergone an extraordinary transformation. You're a real role model. So, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, and as Rosedale says, he doesn't know anyone else in 1990 who was doing high-fat, not just high-protein. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the others in the clinic. He was the one in the clinical world and actually educated a lot of people. Doctors in the mid-90s, including Mercola, et cetera. But for me, it was stumbling upon and feeling brief hours of respite from my eating disorder. And literally, it's so funny because I describe the feeling that I tried to replicate over 3 years after a 12-year eating disorder as feeling moments or hours, a few hours at a time, of feeling like my head was not connected with my body. And it's so interesting later, all these years later, to realize that when leptin isn't signaling, you're literally, mm-hmm. your brain is disconnected from your body. And
so you felt driven or impelled to eat certain foods, but particularly carbohydrate foods, right, during this
definitely.
Time?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you could say I had burnout dopamine receptors just the way any binge eater or addict mm-hmm. has. Mm-hmm. And I first had my liver started to fail, so I fixed my liver.
You had fatty liver from that, right?
Yeah, and then I started to look at my thyroid and was taking an amino acid that also can help the dopamine pathways, which I think sort of made a bridge so that I could actually figure out how to replicate these few hours occasionally of feeling free of food obsession and depression. It took me a year and a half, and the foods that I took out, no one told me how to do this, and it was so surprising. I mean, even my beloved quinoa and blueberries, and sometimes blueberries and quinoa are okay mm-hmm. for people who aren't in the metabolic state that I was, because everyone's threshold.
It has to be very individualized, yeah. And it's almost, and as Israeli researchers once pointed out, the glycemic index of food, we tend to think of it as a fixed thing, is that, table sugar has a very high glycemic index, and say, let's take quinoa as an example. Oh, that's a whole grain. It's got a very low glycemic index. It doesn't hit your blood sugar up. Well, they found, these researchers found that there was tremendous diversity among individuals. So for some people, quinoa is the equivalent of, a hot fudge sundae.
Yeah. You can learn how to binge on anything. Once you've got those burnout dopamine receptors and you have this out of whack reward system, that Kenneth Blum and his researchers discovered in the 70s, I believe, you know how to manipulate things. A plate of brown rice or anything that wouldn't be a drug to someone else can be a drug to someone who has become adept at getting that fix from food.
Okay, so what does leptin have to do with it? And oh, by the way, I'll just introduce this by saying leptin was just a big hot subject of research in the early 2000s because it was felt that this was the key to weight loss. That the observation was that leptin deficient individuals, they're genetically leptin deficient, they were massively obese. So if we could just, synthesize this stuff, we'd have a multi-billion-dollar drug. We'd have people shooting up leptin or maybe taking some oral form of leptin, and it would be all good.
Yeah, because in 94, and this is 4 years after I harnessed it unknowingly, which I wouldn't find out until 2004 when I had a book signing and Dr. Ron Rosedale was there to tell me what I'd harnessed. But in 94, they injected into rodents and they got thin. And like you said, they thought they were going to do this with humans, but only 5% didn't have enough leptin. And it turns out we have too much. And the same thing's going to happen as if we injected insulin. We're going to get leptin resistant. Then boy, does that take big pharma kind of out of the loop. Yeah. And they haven't known what to do because dietarily, the amazing thing, and the science again caught up with what I started helping people to do, and I still didn't know, the name leptin, but I was helping to get these set of symptoms, the drop, dramatic drop in appetite and soaring of energy and deep sleep and mental clarity and many, many other individualized symptoms in each person. But I was able to do this predictably and repeatedly. And by 2004, I'd been doing it for several years. And it's just harnessing this incredible hormone that's already circulating. Everyone always says, oh, do you take it? Do you sell it? Do you inject it?
Right.
And it's there. Your white fat cells and probably other things are producing it because they don't know everything about it. And it's circulating. But the hypothalamus, which is where they believe most of the receptors are, is not listening. Why? Because just like insulin, if you're spiking leptin by, again, insulin spiking foods, blood sugar spiking foods have this ability. First, they're, you're going to lose leptin sensitivity even before you lose insulin sensitivity. But when the brain isn't sensing that circulating leptin, here's the amazing thing. The default message to the brain is that you are in a famine and you'll be a fat storing machine and you will have no satiety signal. And that's how I lived the first half of my life.
So overweight but starving. So the idea is not so much to take leptin to increase or decrease. It's more to tame leptin and keep it in a physiological range
because
we need it.
Keep it low.
Yeah,
absolutely. Even researchers misunderstand this, Dr. Hoffman. I mean, I even communicated with Dr. Rosa. I said, I bet you're really frustrated at how many study conclusions actually are misstated because they still sometimes leave you with this all leptin is good or all leptin is bad when it's sensitivity to it, which is also why getting tested for your leptin levels doesn't tell the story any more than getting tested for any other hormone does.
Because it varies so much through the body, or because if you have high, you might be inconsequential because you have such bad resistance.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, got it. I mean, because some doctors now are testing for leptin. I haven't succumbed to that fad. Because
symptoms are better, just like in the thyroid world, and even in the bioidentical hormone world, some of the better practitioners are going by symptoms now. It's just how the tissues are processing the hormone, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, there's resistance to many hormones, including resistance to thyroid hormone is a classic case, because some people overtly seem normal on their tests, but the thyroid is not getting into the tissue and activating the tissue.
Yep.
So that's a type of resistance. That's well known. So, is there a pill? Is there a supplement? Is there a magic formula for taming your leptin? I mean, are we selling something here?
No. What's, I mean,
1-800, give out the number.
I just disseminate information on how to do it, and it's so not cut and dried. I mean, it's almost like a psychological, cultural, ideological, logistical. It's never going to be studied under a microscope. It's just never. And the whole dietary aspect is a frontier. And you see some of the best written books on leptin showing, in my view, after 91 retreats, living along with people 5 to 10 days at a time, 4 to 6 times a year for more than 17 years. And I see deal breakers all the time that no one's ever going to know is a deal breaker, only because the person who wrote the book or the person who's telling people how to do it worked for them. They don't understand that even an alcohol tincture, or like you mentioned, that protein powder can completely stop this process from working really easily. And so different people have to watch out for different things. So what I do is get people there in a very strict way. I call it my austere, phase one or diet. And so that they know what it feels like, because it's an unmistakable feeling. And only once you know the feeling can you know when you, the individual, has left that feeling.
So you start with an elimination diet, and then the person becomes sort of a testing platform as they reintroduce certain foods to expand their repertoire? Is that
A lot of these foods that they reintroduce are called free foods by any other leptin expert or low-carb expert. Estimation. I mean, free foods. I mean, I am amazed that people are willy-nilly eating nuts and willy-nilly eating cheeses and so many other things, and making, you know, peanut butter fat bombs. And I mean, and I respect the people that the science, you know, Byron Richards, God rest his soul. I mean, what a brilliant and wonderful researcher. And the science was wonderful. The application, in my view, it's like, I can't, if I was telling this to people, I could never do it, and I never would have quit my wonderful career in beauty if I was going to see so much failure as that would produce.
Right. Okay, so it really calls for personalized medicine. It's not a quick fix. There's no magic formula, but there is a solution, and that's what we're going to talk about. Our subject is low-carb dieting. We're talking to award-winning author and widely recognized expert on leptin, Kat James, and Kat also is an expert on natural approaches to beauty. Your website is, once again,
informedbeauty.com or totaltransformation.com.
Okay, and that's what we're talking about, total transformation, not just externally. Really, you want to be beautiful from the inside out, and not just superficially. So, Kat, when we return, we're going to talk about low-carb dieting and some of the perils and pitfalls of low-carb dieting. We'll talk a little bit about keto, because this is a subject that people really want to hear about and explore. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.